This is Fresh Air. Eleanor Anton's artworks have been described as giving us a portrait of our times by impersonating the past. Anton actually creates imaginary historical characters and then becomes them. Her alter egos include Eleanor Nightingale, the Crimean war nurse, and Eleanor Antonova, a black ballerina in Diaghilev's Ballet Russe. She photographs or films herself in character using the visual language of the period. In her new work, she explores the lost world of the silent film by actually making a new silent film and passing it off as an old one. The director is her new persona, Yevgeny Antonov, the controversial silent film director who fled from Russia to Poland in 1927 after his politics got him into trouble with Stalin. Actually, the premise is quite elaborate. In Krakow, Yevgeny was approached by two affluent American entrepreneurs who commissioned him to make a film about shtetl life for the Jewish nostalgia market in America. But the film was never released because Yevgeny Antonov put in too much of his own leftist politics. The story in the film is about a young couple in a Polish shtetl whose relationship is broken up by a gypsy dancer. The gypsy dancer is played by Eleanor Anton's persona, Eleanor Antonova. This movie is both a commentary on silent films and a beautiful silent film. I asked Anton what inspired her to make a new film in the style of Yiddish silent films of the 20s.
Well, it started with when my mother developed Alzheimer's, and she had been an actress on the Yiddish stage in Poland and had regaled me all through my childhood with these wonderful stories. And when she developed Alzheimer's, her English pretty much, she lost it, and parts of her Yiddish kept coming back, somewhat incoherently in a babbling way, but it was Yiddish, and I would try to communicate with her, and I got this passion for going back to that world, and in some way, well, it's like her memory left, perhaps mine came back, and like all memory, it was a... Well, it's like this image I have. It's not like Mexican jumping beans in a box, but memory is like something you invent and discover at the same time. And so I was looking at all these films and going back to the literature, and I knew I had to make a film.
You watched a lot of silent movies before making this film, and I'm wondering what you did to make this look like a silent film. What I'm thinking is, when I see a silent movie, everybody looks different than they do now, you know, and you always wonder, did people have different bone structures then, you know? Did their hair grow differently than it does now? Why did people look so different in the silent films than they do in movies today or in life today? Whatever the reason is, you had to get that look.
Well, in some ways people do perhaps look a little different because obviously the cultures are quite different. And your body language you know, takes on a lot of aspects of, you know, of where your whole psyche is, you know, where the culture is, the kind of set of manners that people assume with each other. But, and of course, there's fashion. And they also had to be lit a certain way. That was really important. There was these sort of banks of light that would surround them sometimes like halos, which was the look of the silent film. And they had very much more expressive faces because they had to handle the gestures as were going to carry the story and their character rather than what they would say. And I chose people who I think we could work with, who had both the talent and the for the, you know, performance, and who had fabulously interesting faces.
What did you do with the lighting to get a silent film era?
Okay, actually,
look?
One of the things was the Poland is very far north. It's like closer to an Ingmar Bergman place than certainly than Southern California where it was shot, and when we worked within the studio, that was hardly a problem. But when we had the market scenes and the outdoor scenes, what we did when we built the set is that we covered it with this scrim, through which the light would get filtered, and it would give that kind of cool northern light. So that was one of the things that, because that really is Poland. I mean, that was one of the things I noticed from the films that had been, the old Yiddish films I had seen that was shot in Poland. Wow. I mean, that light. Okay. And then as far as the other lighting, Rich Wargo, who was the cinematographer, he could get just what I wanted. We played around with different possibilities. The corners of the rooms would be dark. There would be these halos of light around the people. And not corny. We didn't want any of that, the overly heavily romantic lighting of some silent films. We really wanted it to maintain a kind of cool, which is what I am like as an artist. There were all sorts of ways that they were lit, you know, each of the different scenes.
The story that you wrote for your movie is about a young woman who's in love with a poet in the shtetl, but the poet is an intellectual, and he hangs out, you know, with the other intellectuals, and then a troupe of gypsy performers come to town, and he falls in love with the dancer and is thinking about going on the road with them, but meanwhile, his girlfriend is pregnant, and
this is a true Yiddish tragedia.
Yeah, yeah. And in the meantime, her mother figures out she's pregnant, so she's trying to set her up with the butcher in some kind of marriage contract, because the butcher won't mind that she's pregnant. And it's this kind of really, you know, complicated story. But it seems that you've chosen parts of the story that were standard parts of the genre.
Uh-huh.
You know, a little tragedy, a little matchmaker. What were some of the things that, after watching lots and lots of these movies, that you felt you had to put into yours?
Well, actually, as you say, these are all recognizable events. It's part of Yiddish cultural, literary, and movie tradition. It's part of the story tradition. But there is one thing that is different in my film, and that is something that you might find in literature, but you never found in film. And that was that I wanted to make discourse, political discourse, in a sense, the core of the film, and which is, of course, ironical to think of a silent film with discourse being at the center. But I felt I had to do that because, to me, that's Jewish life, which is filled with argument, discourse, politics, whatever. And I knew that would have to be at the center of it, so I've got the socialists, the anarchists, the Zionists, the artists, and they're always arguing. And that is something that you won't find in the tradition, but it's part of the life tradition.
I felt watching your new movie that, in a way, I learned more about silent films than I would have had I gone back and watched a real silent film from the silent film era, because you had distilled so much of what the language of silent films is.
I guess also because when you see it, you know, silent film is very... it's very attractive, and it's very seductive. I mean, all those beautiful, when it's shot well, all those beautiful romantic lightings and those wonderful gradations of dark and light. And I think knowing that it's a contemporary film, we're seeing these things which keep... because a lot of people sit there, and some of them just see it through the end, and they think it's real, but there's these little moments, something is a little wrong. I mean, they're deliberately there, because I'm not doing a counterfeit. I'm doing a transformation, in a sense. And, I think that gets everyone very heightened, you know?
Well, here's an example of a modern touch. There's a couple of anarchists who come to the shtetl, women. And there's one of the police in town is a kind of heavy guy, and he's trying to come on to one of the anarchists, not knowing she's an anarchist. And she calls him like a bourgeois pig. And either like socks him in the stomach or pours something on his head, I forget which, but it's this little kind of like radical feminist anarchist touch there that you weren't going to see in a genre film of the period.
Exactly.
Now, when you were growing up, you've described yourself as a red diaper baby.
Right, yeah. I was brought up essentially by Stalinists. But, you know, they were good people. They were crazed. You know, anytime anything would come that would look like it was going to interfere with a dream, you know, they wouldn't listen. They were unreal, but at the same time, it was a real dream. It was a dream of unity, of people living together in a more equitable and just society. And it was, you know, it was unfortunate that it was all made of, what can I say, shadows.
If you're just joining us, my guest is artist Eleanor Anton, and she's made a new movie in the style of the silent Yiddish films, and it's called The Man Without a World. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Eleanor Anton. She's a performance artist and filmmaker who turns herself into imaginary historical characters and documents their lives through photographs, video, and film. These characters stay with her for years, and she's even lived in persona for weeks at a time. Now back to our interview. Let me tell you about a problem that I think faces anybody who tries to interview you. You are so many different people that to find out who you are, you have to get through Eleanor Antonova and Eleanor Nightingale and the king that you've been and, you know, the dancers that you've been. And I feel like if I ask you anything about yourself, there's like six other people who are going to be answering the question too. Is all of that always happening in your head simultaneously? Like, do you think all these other people live with you all the time?
Well, you know, I really don't believe that anyone is a continuous self. And I think that we all have several, some more, some less, but several selves inside us. And I think, in a sense, that means we have several novels inside us, we have several autobiographies. And in my case, I guess I give them a name, and I confront them out in the open and embellish them somewhat so that they can live full lives. But I don't think, I think everyone's self is always in a process of constructing and deconstructing and falling away and coming together. And,
you know, you could make the argument that what you do is something very close to what people who have a mental illness experience, except for you, it's you have control over it, and it's art, you know?
Well, it's also part of a real, the shaman tradition of religious traditions, and I think there are reasons for it. I think it's an American fantasy of order and neatness that you can be so together and always in your arrow collar, you know? And it's like the man in the gray flannel suit, you know, like you can always somehow manage to hold it all together, and that if you fall apart at any given time, if the problem is with you, hell, the problem's not with you. I mean, you know, you just need a rest from that kind of living and breathing, you know. There's another you that has to kind of come out.
When you were younger, would you look in the mirror and say, this isn't interesting, I don't want this? You know, make me somebody from the past, make me somebody else.
No, it didn't work that way. I remember actually looking in the mirror and trying to get closer and closer to the real self, the essential self, the soul. You know, it's kind of the romantic image of the soul as an onion, and you peel away layer and layer and layer and layer. And, of course, there's nothing but layers. And I do, in a sense, believe that about the self. And that's not to belittle it or demean it in any way. But it's that image. And I remember looking at myself in the mirror, into my eyes, and then going through various feelings of fear at looking in, you know, putting my face up close to the mirror, real fear. And then suddenly love, as I was going to make love to my image, and I loved myself, and I was going to come together with myself, and then hatred, and all these layers going through them. I remember when I was young, but I never put on a hat and said, okay, now you're a pumpkin.
Right. Have you ever been in therapy?
Oh, yeah, a long time. I'm really not crazy.
No, I...
I know you're not saying that. But no, I just, I'm upfront with, look, I mean, what the hell? Life is short, you know. God, we're all hemmed in by the arbitrary givens of our period, our time, our class, our sex, you know, our, you know, the way our families, I mean, you know, like, sin bravely, you know. Imagine.
I like that, sin bravely.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, like, we spend so much of our lives in our head anyway, you know, daydreaming and fantasizing and wishing and getting other endings for things because we screwed something up and wishing you had said that instead of something else. And, you know, like, when you're making art and you're inventing and you have all this, this freedom, you know, like, invent it. I mean, you can go any way you want. You know, you can invent it however you like. Who's stopping you?
Do you feel that on some level you're functioning as an art historian because you're reconstructing in your own way images from the past?
Yeah, I sometimes like to think of myself as an artist and filmmaker who uses these historical events, but in a sense, you know what I do? I kind of like history forgot. It's like Antonova, the black ballerina with Diaghilev's ballet rules. She should have been there, and she wasn't. And history forgot her. Well, I'll just put her back. And there should have been this Russian, Yiddish, silent film director, you know, who was this exile, this metaphor for exile, always traveling around, kind of wandering Jew, wandering artist. And he should have been there. And and of course, there were many traveling, many of these, these artists that would, filmmakers and directors that would have to leave, like had to leave Germany and various others. But it's, again, a metaphor for that. And yeah, there should have been Antonov, and he should have made these Yiddish films. And so I put him back in.
Well, Eleanor Anton, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Eleanor Anton directed the new silent film, The Man Without a World. This is Fresh Air.